It is April 13th, 2020, and the UCF BOT bargaining team is here on Zoom with the UCF UFF bargaining team to discuss and bargain the impact of the COVID-19 changes and that have occurred on our campus and how those affect in-unit faculty and staff. And we have been sharing MOUs back and forth, and I'm going to let Chuck take over now because he drafted our last our version of MOU, and so he understands it probably better than anybody else on our team. Certainly better than I do, since okay. I wasn't here for the last one.
Okay, I apologize that that didn't go through the way I had hoped about 4 hours ago. What I'm going to suggest that I do is show you some things that are different. Basically, we went through points 1 through 10 on your version last week. Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to show you one thing that I moved into the first 10, and then I want to pick it up from what had been point 11 and then go the rest of the way through, and then I figure we can go back and talk about all the changes or just the things that we point out. But there's one thing that we moved from late in your draft to earlier in ours, and it's now our point 4. It should be in lines 35 through 37.
Okay.
On the version that you just received. We thought that, you know, it was very appropriate, as you had suggested, that faculty might have an opportunity to append something to their annual report that would describe how this whole pandemic had affected their teaching, their research, and service. And we moved it to right after point 3 on ours, which is deals with some of the impacts also. So we try to put related points together.
Okay.
So that is there. Then the next one I want to draw your attention to is, point 10 is where we left off last time.
Mm-hmm.
Point 10 on ours is also point 10 on yours. And what we're recommending right now is we say that the university shall, where appropriate, clean public university areas prior to reopening the campus to employees. I think this one's important to bring up very briefly anyhow because of the email that you sent us this morning. I understand that the UFF is interested in how the campus is going to be brought back to life and how we're going to be brought back as employees. We don't really know how that's going to be done yet. And I'm very hesitant to say how we should do that here, because I think we're going to be given some guidance by government agencies. We're going to be given some guidance from university leadership and the emergency management people who are much more familiar with dealing with situations like this. So I think important words there are, you know, where appropriate. I think we've got the right people at the university that are kind of leading this effort. And I, for one, shouldn't be included in that group. I don't know that I have the expertise to make good decisions about how we bring the campus back up. And I think this is one of those places where we got a task force that is working very hard, trying to make sure that things go as smoothly as they can. And I'd like to suggest that we kind of put the burden on them to do the right thing, to keep us informed of whatever the plans are going to be. But they've got much more experience at this than we do. So that's point 10. What we have is our point 11, and I apologize. I don't know that I can remember exactly which point it was. I think it was also point 11 on your draft as well, where we recognize that, you know, some of the folks may be impacted because children are at home with them, and there is additional leave that's available just for these kinds of mm-hmm. of purposes. But what we are doing here is saying it's restricted to the leave that we have plus the additional leave that's being provided. You had requested additional leave on top of that. And we just think that this is more than sufficient. People have leave that they can take. There's now this emergency family and medical leave that people can take. There shouldn't be a problem with people having access to leave to handle this situation. Mm-hmm. Then there are several points that we actually struck. One is point 12 that dealt with providing free testing for everybody. The university has a website where it's directing the university community how to get tested if they think they need to be tested. And the university is hosting one of the local sites, one of the testing sites, which so far, even though it's been open for a week now, has not made it to its capacity. So they're taking appointments, but it's not completely filled up. Testing is available. My understanding is all testing that's being done right now is free anyway. It isn't that the university's providing it, but the university, in collaboration with local partners, government partners, and medical partners, has certainly made testing available locally on campus. It's available in Garage A. They can test up to 250 people a day. That's already done. It's already taken care of. And so we don't think it should be part of this MOU.
And I'd also add in there just that to some extent, our ability to offer testing is not just a function of what we would like to do, but a function of what tests will be available to us. Right now we have plenty, but as you know, there are, every governor in the state is, in every state is saying, we need more tests, we need more tests. We can only test to the extent that we actually have tests that we can use. So we're doing our absolute best, and right now we're doing fine. But, if we all of a sudden had to test every single person coming back to campus, or even just all the employees, I'm not sure we would actually be able to get that many tests at one time. So, to some extent, we're limited by what is we can get our hands on, so to speak.
Yeah, that's actually an excellent point, Sherry. This testing center that's been set up has a maximum capacity of 250 per day. If we were to say that, everybody at the university community had to be tested when the campus reopened, it would take a long, long time to get everybody tested. And of course, a test is a snapshot in time. Somebody could test negative, go out and celebrate, say, oh, I don't have to worry, and the next day they're infected and they don't know about it. So it's very, very hard to implement a comprehensive testing program that gives you a lengthy, accurate picture of where everybody stands vis-a-vis the virus. So anyhow, on the university is not inclined to provide that free testing. The university, in collaboration with these partners, has made testing available on campus, and any employee, anybody in the community that wants to be tested is certainly welcome to schedule an appointment there. The next thing that is on our list is our point 12, and it was a different number on yours, and we really need some help on this one because we're not sure exactly what's being asked. So we don't know if this is intended to be something where, God forbid, one of our employees would die of the COVID-19, or if it's a dependent of the faculty member. It wasn't super clear to us. So can somebody help us understand what this point about the guidelines for a beneficiary of an estate?
So actually, well, it's in, I think it's already in the collective bargaining. I actually had someone's son call me. They told me about their elderly parent who works for UCF and is a professor there. And I think they said that they were calling on behalf of the parents. Now, I don't know. I guess my name is out there, so they call me instead of calling HR. And they just wanted to know what the process was. But I think I put it in there just it's kind of a way that there is some confusion, I guess. And some people, yeah, I think this was early on too. This was like 2-3 weeks ago when people were really panicking about this. What if my 80-year-old, you know, father who's been working for UCF forever now dies? Or what's going to happen next? And I don't know. And, you know, it's just people were panicking. And I don't know what, I don't know if they called human resources, but they did call me and they just asked me about it, like what would happen if the worst happened. And I said, you know, and I just explained to them that there were clear guidelines for the beneficiary. And you need to know who your parents, I guess, like in my case, like I know Gaber. So if I die tomorrow, I already told my family, you go to Gaber Agency and then they have everything organized for me. So I think it was just maybe a sort of a panic reaction. So I just wanted to, I'm not really sure where this information is. I know for myself, but I didn't go on the HR website. I mean, is this information already listed on the HR website?
Well, so in the event that any of us would succumb to any cause of death, someone, and it obviously wouldn't be the deceased, but a family member, a friend, somebody's going to have to contact the university or they're not going to know about it. I mean, so a supervisor needs to know, HR needs to know. If either one of those is contacted by someone who's left behind, that'll be taken care of. You know, I think you used an appropriate word. There are university processes in place when an employee dies, and we just have to make sure that the university's aware of that. But that's no different for COVID-19 than it is for an automobile accident, for cancer, anything else. Somebody's got to let the university know that someone has passed away. Listening to you, Giovanna, I really appreciate the explanation and the story. It's interesting that you're getting phone calls like that. I think I may know who that is. I think this is something that really is something that we do on a routine basis. Hope it's not too routine for us, so we don't have to deal with this very often. But when an employee dies, the university has plenty of experience dealing with that. And I don't think for this special circumstance that there'd be anything that we would want to do differently. And I think we could strike this point.
Yeah. I'm sorry if you heard me. Yeah, that's what I said. Did you want to strike that language because you have something in place?
Yes. Okay. I think we agree, but if we have a caucus or something like that, we'll talk more about it. But I'm sort of thinking we'll probably agree. But it, just to be clear, this is the faculty member, the in-unit employee who is succumbing to COVID-19, is that?
Yes, yes.
Okay, thank you. And the next thing that we have is actually our last point, is that assuming we come to some agreement on an MOU here and we get this ratified, depending upon what things look like as we get through the summer, as we're heading into the fall, there may be a reason to reconvene and do new impact bargaining. I don't think we want to, if we go through the whole process of bargaining and then ratification, if there's some little thing that comes up in June, I don't think we necessarily want to go back and impact bargain everything that happens. But if we're set up now for what happens, you know, this semester and I think into the summer, to be prepared, if we know we have to do something for the fall, this just suggests that we would begin impact bargaining that would impact the fall would deal with situations in the fall on or before August 8th, before the contract start.
Okay.
Now, there are some other things that were in the draft that you had sent us, and we looked at every one of those points that had been suggested to us, and there's some that we just don't think we can include. There's nothing that we can really do here, and they're not necessarily unique to COVID-19. An example is a point about vision care. The state contracts with providers so that they make available to us vision care services. UCF does not negotiate those insurance packages that we're all able to choose from through HR. So the state has already got an agreement in place with certain vision carriers. As far as I know, those vision carriers are satisfactory. If there are particular issues, which it sort of sounded like with the way that point was written, I would suggest getting in touch with people first and letting them know. I think the people that have any concerns, if there are any, ought to let people first, the state agency that's handling these things, be aware of it. There's nothing that we can do as a bargaining team. There's nothing that the Board of Trustees can do about those things. So that's another example of something that in the draft that we sent you, it doesn't appear. We've essentially suggested that particular point should be struck. Okay. 16 was a point about parking permits, and we hear you on this one, and there are people on this call that pay quite a bit for parking for those reserved spots near Millikan Hall, and for the last 2.5 weeks mine's been empty, and I'm not the only one. We looked into this, and what we were reminded is that parking services is an auxiliary, and parking services is self-funded. So, and the permit fees that faculty, staff, and students pay to park is actually covering the bonds that were used to finance parking garages. So there's no wiggle room that we have on parking. We feel your pain. We understand, but there's nothing we can do. If we say we're going to provide a refund or we're going to not going to collect these for a certain period of time, we're basically putting parking services out of business. And that's unfortunately something that we can't do. There was another point asking about whether employees could have administrative rights to their university-owned laptops, desktops, and iPads. This is another one. Yeah, I'd like to be able to do what I want on my computer, but because of information security issues, we're not given that access. There's nobody that's participating on this call that I'm aware of that has that kind of administrative right on the devices that they use. Again, it'd be nice, but the reasons that we're not able to do that are pretty serious. And you know, we remember, I guess it was 3 or 4 years ago, there was a pretty significant data breach. So information security is important, and the more people that would have administrative access would make us all more vulnerable from an information security standpoint.
Chuck, may it, just barely yesterday over the weekend, I had actually somebody tell me the opposite. So because they couldn't get all their soft, now they're concerned about the opposite thing, which is they're using their personal computer and they're concerned about having documents going across like just regular internet and not having the same sort of information security. So I don't know if you guys had any position on that. Because some people are just using their, I guess I shouldn't tell you, but yeah, I'm using my personal computer as well to use a lot of things. just because I have more ability to move and add programs and apps and update things.
We didn't talk specifically about that. I assure you, you're not the only person using a personal device. I'm using one right now. I guess I would understand why there are some concerns about transporting files or sending files from a non-university device to a university device. The answer is, of course, we shouldn't be doing those kinds of things.
I was going to say, don't let IT know you're doing that.
Okay.
They won't be very happy. But, I mean, if you are using university-issued equipment and you want to add an app, you can, I mean, that IT is working around the clock practically, and they're very responsive right now. I've had no problem getting a hold of them. If you need to add something, they'll add it for you, but they just don't want people individually doing it. And I know they don't want people using their own personal computers, but, you know, I get that people are going to do that to some extent.
Okay, because I guess, and like I said, I just heard this yesterday. So
I talked to Karen Cobbs about it, and she said, yeah, just have them call IT, and we'll do whatever you need. We'll put whatever you need on your computer. But they want to be able to control it centrally for obvious reasons, for security reasons.
My other question was, I guess some people didn't, because they felt, I don't know, it was like the mass exodus. I guess some people are now starting to like settle down and realizing, oh, wait, I need this, I need that. And I was wondering, so they wondered, is it possible to get their desktop from the university? Because I had a desktop, so that's why I didn't take it with me. So, and I only have a laptop at the house. So I guess, you know, when she was telling me this information, I was like, oh, yeah, that happened to me too. Will IT, is it? Can it bring people's desktops to their home to set up?
I don't know the answer to that, but it won't solve the problem, as I understand it, because what we have is a protected network on campus, and bringing the device outside that network, even if the computer has better protection software on it, once we get outside that UCF firewall, I don't think it's any different from using your own machine.
Oh, okay.
I mean, truly the best thing is probably the VPN.
Okay.
I'm making it sound like I know what I'm talking about, too.
I guess, yeah.
You're not recording this, are you?
There were some, since I'm working with a lot of different groups, there were some supervisors as well who were saying that they had to do a lot of tech work for their, you know, for the people that working under them. And it was like the VPN was on and off working. But that's just a general complaint. I know that's not like really a bargaining issue.
I have to say I've been using OneDrive, which is supposedly good. I mean, they're saying that that's secure and so forth, but it's all, everything is off and on. I mean, you know, I think a lot of it's just overload on the Wi-Fi systems.
You know? Okay. I mean, all right.
I suddenly disappear for a while. I've been having that issue with my Zoom too. So, you know, hopefully I won't, but if I do, I'll come back.
Okay, thank you.
It's not deliberate. It's just occasionally I just fade out.
The next point that you had brought up, Giovanna, was about the possibility of the university negotiating a contract with internet vendors. And this is, you know, also something that we can't do. We looked into it, and the university doesn't negotiate for private services for employees. But there's a website URL that I can send you that was suggested to us that directs us to providers who offer discounts for educators.
Okay.
So it isn't anything that we bargained for or negotiated for, but it's something that's available and people that work at the university could benefit from it. So I'd be happy to send you that link.
Yeah, and I was wondering, would you be opposed to having that link within this impact bargaining, like for so that other educators could know? Easy access.
I think we'll talk about that on our side when we caucus, but I think that's a good question.
Okay.
Next point that I saw was saying that the university shall reimburse faculty up to $1,000 for items that they purchase to remain productive and efficient. What we were told is that the university is able to provide equipment. Many faculty have laptops that they're able to take with them. If people just let folks in their department, their college, know this is what I need, I don't think anybody's going to have to shell out any money for that. It's likely it could be provided. There may be a slight lead time to get whatever's needed, but it's certainly doable. Okay, and then you had a point number 21 that said, given the challenges and changes owed to COVID-19, both parties reserve the right to revisit this document and make alterations. That was kind of the point that I believe I made earlier, that we said if there's something that goes beyond the spring and the summer, we can reopen negotiations, impact bargaining. Beginning on or before August 8th.
Okay.
I think that's covered in that point. So there are a couple things that I think the draft you had was quite complete. Mm-hmm. There were a couple things that I think maybe weren't necessarily repeated, but they were very similar, and we tried to combine those things.
Okay.
And I think I've gone through everything, but if somebody sees something that we haven't addressed, I'd be happy to talk about it.
Thank you, Chuck. I appreciate that. Would you guys, since you didn't get it ahead of time, would you like to take some time to read over it and discuss it before we, would you like to take a break, or how do you want to do this?
Yeah, we'd like to take a caucus. How are we going to do this? So if not breakout room, so we need to get off and then come back?
I think that's fine, or mute, okay. I don't know, whatever you want to do.
Okay, I think we'll do that then. So we're going to go into the other room, I guess, not a breakout room, but we're going to get off of here, but we'll be right back. So we'll probably be back in about like 15 minutes or so. Does that sound good?
Sure. Take your time, whatever, yeah.
Okay, and I'll discuss some of the points. So number two, so we were able to do like a track changes, so we'll probably work off of that.
Okay.
And some of the issues, and we had some questions, was with number two, the possibility to waive evaluations. So we're fine with the include, the exclude, or include, because you're right, some people will want to include that, some of that. But we were a little bit questioning some of the things, assuming good faith, with the words assuming and also good faith effort, because sometimes it really depends on the chair's perspective of what is good faith and what isn't, and we've had those issues. The other thing too is we have, so Scott, and I don't know if he's mentioned, we've heard from actually 70 members. We did like kind of like a Google form and like, let's hear from you about your impact. And we just realized we have about over 70 answers. And some of the people who are trying to make good faith effort have like special needs children and other issues of that sort, which are very serious, and they're trying to make efforts, but it's extremely difficult. So I'm a little bit concerned about good faith effort, like maybe you are, but it maybe doesn't show, like because you're trying to take care of a special needs, you're a single parent, and you know, being on, I don't know, I don't want to call it lockdown, but being at stay-at-home orders, and maybe this child is extreme ADD and needs to be outside. And, you know, at the end of the day, and I will say even with mine is pretty calm because I can give her an iPad or something. But I can't imagine like a child that needs a lot of attention all day. At the end of the day, you're quite exhausted. And I'm exhausted too. I've been going to bed quite early. So we're just saying there's certain people, and I know we do have that language in there about like a case by case, you know, they're able to say their stories, but I also don't want a chair discriminating against somebody who looks like they didn't do anything, but they were just sheerly exhausted. And I will say I have been talking also to higher level people like deans, and they're finding the same thing too. They themselves are saying that what used to take them 2 hours to do now takes like five, between like instead of just talking in the hallway, you're passing back and forth 4, 5, 6 emails. And instead of working maybe an 8-hour day, you're now working a 15-hour day and still working on the weekends. And this is at the dean level. This is not even like at the faculty level. So I can only imagine some of them, especially, you know, and I guess deans have the same issues. I mean, some of the deans tend to be a little bit older than some of our younger faculty, but, you know, who have young children. So I'm just a little bit concerned about number two.
Yovana, can I ask briefly to the faculty member with either special needs children or small children, are they aware of the emergency FMLA benefit and that the fact that they may qualify for that?
I don't think they are. And I guess they were worried that if they do, there's a lot of general worry. Could you send me some like language on what, can you send me the link to it so I can read it very carefully and I can start sending it to some of them?
I mean, the thing is people.
Our website, I can send you the link to that, but they have a special, I think, coronavirus section of the HR website. There's a bunch of Q&As about emergency paid sick leave and emergency FMLA. I can just give you, just briefly, the only reason for the new FMLA is to take care of a child that is home because their school or place of care is closed.
Okay.
The only extended reason. And that EFMLA benefit is paid while it is at 2/3 of the employee's regular salary. They could use any kind of paid leave, if they have annual or sick, paid leave that's accrued to make up the difference. And the first 2 weeks are unpaid, but they could use their emergency paid sick leave, that new benefit, because one of the 6 reasons for that is taking care of small children, basically the same reason. The child is out of school because of the COVID-19 pandemic. So those kind of two work together in that situation to say, okay, the first 2 weeks would be paid by the sick leave, the next up to 10 weeks, depending on how much FMLA they've already taken, they might be eligible for 2/3 pay, and then they could use additional leave to make up the rest if they wanted. They don't have to supplement with their leave. So it's not a perfect option, but it is there for those people who are feeling overwhelmed, having the children at home, and you just can't always do 2 full-time jobs at once, being a parent and being doing your duties. So that's a recognition and a new benefit. And I think HR has some really good resources, so I can send you to that.
Okay. I mean, I guess since we're toward the end of the semester, some were not, they're trying to finish their course. They're trying to do their best. And they were concerned. And then also when I say, I mean, some of these, it tends to be kind of like the burdens of a lot of females and stuff. So it's targeting a specific group that is home with their kid. Another issue with number two was, I guess we got into, just among the 5 of us, our team members, we discovered that course evaluations is much more broader than I thought. So in my department, I'll tell you that we still do traditional teaching observations. Like we actually still, like, I go to junior faculties and I watch their classes and stuff. But a lot of departments have stopped that for a variety of different reasons. It doesn't work for them. And they depend solely on SPIs. So I was wondering what you meant by course evaluations, and if we could broaden that to mean not just SPIs, but, or if you do mean SPIs, to be more clear about that.
Okay.
All right. And we do appreciate that you added the language that people could choose to exclude or include their teaching evals through Summer D 2020. Oh, thank you, Sarah. I just got the link. Scott, did you want to add anything?
No, only to try and schedule for next week, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, correct. Yeah, our team right now is looking at the rest of the points, but the whole time we were able to just talk about number two. But we appreciate the efforts. We appreciate the progress that we're making. And we just, I know there's the 3-day rule, so we'd have to wait till like this Friday or Monday.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we had already, we were telling Scott, had just sort of penciled in for that. We just kind of assumed we were going to be doing Mondays from now on until we got it done. So, okay. Yeah, so we'd already kind of blocked that off on our calendars.
Okay. All right. So Monday at 3:00. And what I'll do too is I'll send you some language based on, and I guess I wanted to ask you both, and rather than, you know, working together here, rather than using language such as assuming or good faith effort, do you guys have any other suggestions?
Let us think about that. I understand your concern. I do. We have had some issues, and the reason we put that in partly is because we've had some issues with people who basically have just shut down and done nothing with their students. And we're having not a lot, but, you know, they're always going to be those people.
I'm aware of two that, you know, have basically checked out, and both of them are men.
Mm. Yeah. So we get that we don't want to be, we understand your concern about this being too subjective. Let's maybe we can think together about some ways to make this more objective, but still get the point that we're not trying to, we get that this is hard for everybody and people aren't going to be able to probably do maybe as spectacular a job as they would like to under these circumstances, but they have to do something. So we just have to figure out how to make that point.
Okay.
I think that sounds good. You know, if we could, if I could offer that having the meeting next Monday, you know, that we could also bring more information, right? Like, so I have one concern, you know, my biggest concern is that not everybody is well. You know, I'm worried about, you know, someone who's going to just, you know, feel the stress just too much, you know, so, right, to sort of kind of think about that in terms of the evals and everything. So, but if, you know, I allow me to, or us to bring some specific examples
sure.
And share that. The same thing with the, that $1,000 item where we kind of were, you know, hey, up to $1,000 for stuff like that. And I know that Chuck addressed that too. This is collaborative. We're doing great, right? This isn't about like yes or no. And we're not going to stand here and say, no, we want $1,000.
Yeah.
And we'll stand there and say no. Let me bring to you some of the other, like, so we collect a lot of information from faculty. So like the clarinetist who had to like buy special equipment that, you know, to be able to actually, yeah, you know, perform in the way that they need to. You know, there's so, right. And so maybe if we bring some of those more specific examples, we can kind of talk about what, you know,
yeah,
what
is, that would be helpful.
What is the gambit of the things that we all need look like? Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you. That would definitely be helpful.
And I'd like to add, it was funny because it was when it was the musician, that was Chuck's example, was the musician that's going to do great. So the musician will do great because he spent a lot of money soundproofing his house.
Whoa.
We're hearing all sorts of stories. I mean, the ones with the special, single mom living alone with special needs is a real.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
there's some faculty just have big families. You know, imagine a big family that you can't send out and go to school and you think you're going to get some things done. You know, so looking forward to continuing talking.
Okay.
Okay. So we'll share some of the specific examples. And for the next round, did you want us to return with some language?
That's fine.
Okay.
That'd be great.
Okay, but we really appreciate UFF. I really appreciate like coming up with the language and explaining and going through detail for each point. Thank you.
Yeah, I think there was like a lot of really good stuff that's being worked out too. So, you know,
good.
All right.
Well, that's what we're trying to do because everybody's under stress right now. This is a hard, hard time for everybody.
Yeah.
Thank you all. Hope you have a good rest of your day.
Yeah, have a good day.
Stay safe and healthy.
Be safe.
Yeah, stay healthy. Yes. Okay. Thank you. All right. Bye. Bye.